The following program is for mature audiences only. Football talk shows, most of them sound like this. Blah, 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 blah. Not this one. That's because it features the former director of college scouting with the Chicago Bears. He worked on the staff that drafted, you know, the likes of Devin Hester, Olin Krutz, Lance Briggs. He's the man who takes shit from absolutely nobody. He's Greg Gabriel. Gabriel joins longtime Chicago sports reporter David Schuster. And this is, accordingly, Gabriel Schuster Talk Bears.
And welcome into a very special Gabriel Schuster video podcast. Oh my God, I'm on TV. I might freak out here. As we put the Bears' opening victory over the Lions in our rearview mirror today. Today is Wednesday. And we're going to look ahead to game number two coming up on Sunday at Soldier Field, an empty Soldier Field, by the way, against the New York Giants. And we will do all that shortly. But first, let's tackle, pun intended, the Allen Robinson saga. Now, yesterday, let's recap this. Allen Robinson pulled all his pictures off of Instagram and all his other social media platforms, pictures of his Bears attire and everything else in regards to his career with the Bears up to date. And then later in the day, there were reports that he and his agent, Brandon Parker, demanded a trade. But you, Greg, you communicated with Parker later in the day, who poo-pooed all that. And now today, Allen Robinson, to his credit, he met the media over Zoom, of course, up at Hallis Hall, and he said he's going to be a Bear the rest of the season. So, Greg, I want you to put in perspective where you think this story is right now.
Yeah. In all honesty, I think this is a lot to do about nothing. You know, and all the time I spent in the league, I've been through this countless times. Players want money. They get impatient. I think last week when we saw a couple wide receivers get extended around the league and get some pretty big money, that made Allen and his group probably get a little antsy. So they started to put the public pressure on. It's not a big deal. This happens all the time in every sport. You know, in fairness, I got lucky yesterday. I had no idea earlier in the day that Brandon Parker was the agent. When I found that out, and Brandon's dad, Eugene Parker, was a very, very close friend of mine for a number of years, and he passed away a few years ago, suddenly. But I've known Brandon probably for 12, 13, 14 years through Eugene. So I reached out to Brandon, and what's going on here? And he had a couple quotes. And so then he allowed me to tweet out the one quote, which was basically, I don't remember if I have it word for word, but he goes, people are looking at this as a snapshot when it's a motion picture. And basically what he's meaning, it's going to take time and we'll get it done.
All right, now, to your credit, like I said, you were the first. I don't know if you were the only, but you were the first one to have some back and forth with Brandon Parker last night. And again, I think the two of you put things into perspective. And let me put something into perspective financially. And you mentioned that some of the other players around the league, good wide receivers, by the way, did get their money. For instance, DeAndre Hopkins really broke the bank. And he had 20 catches or whatever in his first game in his new uniform. But he's averaging, Greg, and I don't know, when it comes to football, you're not sure how much is guaranteed, but he's averaging annually $27 million per season. Next on the totem pole is Julio Jones, another really good wide receiver, $22 million. And Amari Cooper is third at $20 million. Now, right now, Allen Robinson, I think he's playing on this year's contract, which expires at $13 million a season. So you can see that he and his agent, Brandon Parker, want to at least move up the totem pole. And so I think that's going to happen. Now, what's also interesting yesterday, Greg, is that a bunch of players on the Bears, and I think this is actually both good and bad, they spoke up on behalf of Allen Robinson, and they went on their own social media platforms and said, listen, it's really important that we get this guy back in the fold financially. And they, you know, and I think that's great for camaraderie. And I speak, you know, I defer to you because you've been up at Lake Forest in the locker room so many times over the years. But I think that's good for camaraderie that his teammates stepped up. Maybe not so good for management, because management's going to take a look at this and say, well, there's a revolt going on downstairs. But I think in the long run, and it might even actually be the short run, I think Allen Robinson gets more money very shortly.
I don't know if it's going to be very shortly. I think he's going to get more money, whether it's you know, with the Bears or somebody else, and somebody else would be next year. But the Bears can always put the tag on him, so they have that option. You got to look at a lot of things. First, teammates, they're going to stick up for their player, for their teammate 100% of the time, unless they don't like the guy. And Allen Robinson is a very likable teammate, well-respected in the locker room by the coaches and his teammates. So I think that just is a thing that was bound to happen. I don't think the people upstairs care one way or the other, you know, about that. Again, this is all part of a process. And things like this happen. Got a little out of hand yesterday. You know, excuse me. A lot of it, I think, was more social media related with fans than anybody else. But because social media is the way it is, Twitter is the way it is, things get compounded. And you know, you look at it when you have experience in something like this, you just got to look at the realities of it. And the realities aren't anywhere close to what was being said on social media yesterday.
One of the many, many things that I love about you, Greg, is that you always speak your piece. And I love when you go after what I call bloggers on the internet, on social media. And there were some reports that you shot down very quickly last night on social media. And I think one of the reports said that Robinson was upset about so many things, including one of them being that he was upset that the Bears decided not to go with Nick Foles to be their starting quarterback this season. I think you shot that one down, as well as many other things. I know you just love putting up your dukes and giving it to certain people on social media.
Well, you know what it is, David? These people make this stuff up as they go along. They have no idea, and then they'll always say, well, according to a source. Well, who's your source? They don't have any sources. They're not members of the, quote, news media that is at Hallis Hall every day and has, you know, connections that they've built up for years. And they certainly don't know anybody in the league, so they make this stuff up. A lot of it, you know, you look at their social media handles, they got 300 followers, 180 followers or whatever, and they just, you know, they throw something out trying to get a bigger following, hoping that that will get them a bigger following. It, you know, it's nonsense, and I have no problem kind of blowing them away whenever I get an opportunity.
I love when you slap them down. It makes my heart warm. All right, listen, today up at Hallis Hall, Allen Robinson, like I said, to his credit, he spoke to, you know, and a lot of times people in those kind of situations, they just want to shy away from the media and just, you know, not talk to them. But to Allen Robinson's credit, he spoke today. So did Matt Nagy, of course, and Mitch Trubisky. This is the normal Wednesday where the coach and the quarterback do talk. So let's hear from all three of those participants. And let's start with Allen Robinson. And the first question to Allen Robinson today was, why did you scrub all that stuff off your Instagram and other social media platforms and took it down yesterday?
I took some emotion. You know, at the same time, I think everybody knows how passionate I am about the game. You know, or the passion that I've had, you know, for the city of Chicago, and I had the passion that I had, you know, for the city of Chicago and to put on this Bears uniform and everything like that. You know, so again, I mean, I'm a passionate person, you know, again, I know I may not show it on the sidelines and stuff like that, you know, but the things that I believe in, you know, I really do believe in, you know, and again, that's just where that came from.
Now, Robinson in the game against the Lions, he was targeted 9 times. He caught 5 passes for 74 yards. Actually, I'm surprised that they didn't target him a little bit more than they did, but we talked about this on our podcast on Monday, that they spread the wealth, if you will, offensively by throwing the football to 11 different receivers, which I think in the long run is better for a football team. But there's no question he's the number one target, is he not, Greg?
Yeah, no question. And his answers, he almost could have written them down before you heard him talk. There were very basic answers, trying to get away from, you know, the drama, so to speak, of yesterday, and, you know, that he's ready to go forward, and he is. He's a football player. You know, there's one tweet yesterday, a guy said to me, well, he might not play hard the rest of the year. And, you know, give me a break. That's not – if you've watched him play his whole career, that's not part of his DNA. He always plays hard. And, you know, you look at the game Sunday, there was that one catch he had the fourth quarter – in one of the scoring drives where he laid out across the middle to make the catch, outstanding catch. you know, no, he's not going to try hard. Yeah, okay.
You know, the first guys who get hurt on a football field are the ones who don't try hard. That's the first guys who get injured. So, absolutely, that was nonsense. Now, Matt Nagy at his press conference today said he had a long, long talk with Allen Robinson. Now, I can only imagine what the two talked about. I mean, you can think about most of this, and I'll get your opinion on that. But here's Nagy talking about the fact that he did have a nice conversation with Robinson earlier today.
Probably the biggest thing is just both of us understanding that this is it's a process. You know, these things don't happen overnight. And again, remember what I've said from day one. This is an instant gratification world we live in right now. Everything needs to happen now. So patience and process is a part of this. And when you know you have two sides that are working through this, it's their job to do it. And you know, me as the head coach and him as the player, we have our own relationship too. And I think that that's important that we talk through that kind of stuff. And again, Allen Robinson is a super, super, really, really super individual. And then he's a super player too. So it's just, you talk through those things.
Greg, let me ask you this question. Is the head coach in this instance, is he sort of caught between the two sides, if you will? I mean, obviously he can't deal with the contracts. That's not his domain, but you know, he obviously has to side a little bit with management at times, but he also has to back up his players. So I'm just wondering, you know, I'm sure he says and does all the right things, but, you know, how do you think a coach handles something like that?
Well, you know, let's talk about Coach Nagy first. He has had a reputation of being a player's coach, and what we heard there was a perfect example of that. You know, he's going to, you know, talk highly of his players. He's going to, you know, try to push aside whatever drama we had yesterday. I've used that word a couple times. And get back to the task at hand, and that's beating the New York Giants this week. So you just try to push aside everything that went on yesterday. I'm sure he had a very cordial talk with Allen and basically, you know, hey, we don't need this stuff right now. Understand how you're feeling, but let's get on and play football.
All right, and I mentioned earlier that I think that this contract is going to happen sooner rather than later, and let me explain why I think that. Because in 2017, he did injure his knee in the very first game while he was still playing for Jacksonville. And then he, you know, he was basically out for the rest of the season. And even in 2018, he didn't recover fully when he first came over to the Bears. So I think he wants to get this contract settled sooner rather than later, because a player never knows if he's going to get injured or not. So that's where I'm coming from as far as that. But here he talks in this next soundbite where he says he definitely expects to finish the entire season in a Bears uniform.
I would say so. You know, again, I mean, the tough question of that is, you know, again, you know, everything that was said or whatever the case may be, you know, I've talked to Ryan, I've talked to Coach Nagy, you know, so, I mean, as far as everything else, you know, we're in the clear with that, you know, and like I said before, you know, again, for me, it's about, you know, playing with these guys, playing with these guys in the locker room, you know, playing for Coach Nagy, you know, again, I mean, that never has really, you know, shifted. So again, for me at the same time is my job to go out there and play well on Sundays, you know, and to help my offense and to help my team, you know, get better each and every week and win games.
All right. And one last soundbite, Greg, and then I'll get your thoughts on everything as we wrap up this subject before we get to previewing the game against the Giants. Mitch Trubisky obviously is part of the equation. He's the quarterback who throws to Robinson on a weekly basis. And he was asked how important is both Robinson to the team, but also to him as the starting quarterback.
Allen's just so reliable. You can go to him in any situation. And the saying about him is when he's open, when he's not open, he's still open. So just put in his area, he'll go make a play for the offense. And that's my guy. So I know there's a lot of talk about his contract and all that. And hopefully they take care of him, because me and the rest of the guys on the team, we want him around. And that's very obvious. We love A-Rob, and we all know what he brings to this team, and they just got to get that done so we can keep him around and continue to take care of business. But we're not worried about anything else, because we know how Allen approaches the game, practice every single week. So in between the lines, in the locker room, everything's been the same. It's been awesome.
All right, Greg, and wrapping it all up, I thought the Bears did a really good job today in dealing with this subject head on. I mean, you know from too many times in the past that these contract situations or any other kind of situations can splinter a locker room and cause problems between the management and the players. So I think the Bears did a good job today by trotting everybody out there. And again, to Allen Robinson's credit, he also met the media and dealt with the subject. So you know what? It was like a one-day blip. It'll come up again maybe if this thing festers down the road. But like I said, I anticipate it'll get handled sooner rather than later. But I think the Bears did a pretty good job dealing with this today.
No, I agree with you, David. And everybody involved said the right things. And, you know, whether that was scripted or to the heart, you know, who knows? We'll find that out over the course of the next couple of weeks to see if this flares up again. But I think, you know, the purpose of today was to take away everything that was said yesterday, because obviously it was a hot topic, you know, and especially in a town with Chicago, a huge media town, millions of people. It's going to be that much bigger than, say, a town like Cincinnati or Buffalo or something that doesn't have that huge media presence that they have here.
All right, let's turn our attention now to the Giants game. And by the way, the Bears will try and get off to a 2-0 start. Do you remember the last time the Bears did that, Greg?
No, not offhand.
It's been a while.
You can tell me.
2013. So this will be the first time in 7 years that they potentially could get off to a 2-0 start.
That was under Mr. Trestman.
Yes, it was. Might have been the highlight of his NFL coaching career, to be honest with you. But I think when it's all said and done, we'll get our prediction upcoming here before the end of this video podcast. But I think they will. The Giants did not look good, obviously, in their opening game. They played on Sunday night. We didn't get a chance to talk about them on our Monday audio podcast, but the Steelers handled them. Ben Roethlisberger turned back the clock, if you will, at least throwing the football. He had 3 touchdown passes. He didn't turn back the clock running the football because the man still has a piano crate on his back. But besides that, what was most impressive is that the Steelers, from the Steelers' standpoint, the Giants only had 29 yards rushing, and Saquon Barkley, 16 carries for only 6 yards. Now, I anticipate the Bears are not going to do that good a job on him, but obviously that's going to be the focus on defense for Sunday.
You know, I during that game, I tweeted out, I think it was in the third quarter, and I said, because I was seeing stuff on Twitter about, well, the Bears should be able to do this and that against the Giants. And so to counteract that, I tweeted out, what you see in a given game isn't necessarily what you're going to see the following week. And right away, Patrick Manley gave it a like. And that's the case. You know, sure. The Giants are going to go in. It was the first game under a new coach. We had no preseason, basically, no preseason games, limited number of practices, and a new offense and a new defense. So really, this is the first time they're really going live. You know, in game-type situations, they looked horrible. There were some things that you could like. In certain situations, Daniel Jones looked pretty good. That one long drive that ended in an interception, that was a great drive until that throw. He should have just thrown it away. But, and that's a, you know, mistake that a young player makes. He's only in his second year. But before that, they had a number of third-down plays, kept the drive alive, used up a lot of clock, moved, 80-something yards or something. So you got to be, from the Bears' standpoint, concerned. Now, a disadvantage for the Bears in this game is, number one, one less day for the coaches to prepare as far as making a game plan, because the Giants didn't play until Monday night. So generally speaking, you're spending a good part of Monday starting to formulate that game plan. Well, being that this is a new coaching staff and, you know, Garrett is the offensive coordinator. He hasn't called plays in about 8 or 9 years. So you didn't know exactly what he was going to do offensively for the Giants. There's no tendencies. You know, you go into a game and you got on the card, there's certain tendencies of what they do. This is what they do in second and long. This is what they do in third and short. You know, you got certain plays. So the defense can prepare for that. Bears aren't going to have that. So that's an advantage for the Giants, a disadvantage for the Bears. And the same thing defensively. It's the first time you saw the Bears run this scheme. And so exactly how they're going to do it in the game against the Bears, that makes it, excuse me, a little harder for the Bears to prepare. Same time on the Giants side, they got one less day to prepare for the Bears, but at the same time, basically the same offense the Bears have been running. Now this is the third season, second season with the defense. So they have more tape in which to use and really to get prepared for the game. Is it a big deal? No, it's not a big deal, but it still falls into the equation.
All right, you mentioned Daniel Jones, the Giants' second-year quarterback, and he had an up-and-down game in his opener. He was 26 of 41, 279 yards. He had a couple of touchdown passes, but he also had a couple of interceptions. Tell me about his strengths. Tell me about his weaknesses. Tell me how you think the Bears are going to try and dump him on his keister, if you will.
Very smart kid, good arm strength, quick release. I think he processes very, very quickly. You know, I know the people with the Giants, so I've been able to talk to them, not in the last week, but, you know, I spent time at their training camp last year. And then, you know, leading up to the XFL stuff, you know, I had a lot of conversations with their general manager, Dave Gettleman, about certain players, and you get to know what their feeling is. You know, let's go back last year. Gettleman and the Giants took a huge hit for drafting Jones where they did. When, you know, all along that was their guy, and Giants had the last laugh. I thought Jones had a great rookie year. They don't have the talent surrounding him that you'd like to have. They revamped the offensive line during the offseason. I still don't think it's where they want it to be, especially when you watch that game the other night, and they had to open up against one of the best defenses in football that just throws everything at you. They were overloading one side at times to try to confuse the rookie left tackle, Andrew Thomas. Their center, Nick Gates, is really the first game he's ever played at center in a live situation. He's always been a tackle. The right tackle, Cameron Fleming, to me, you can have him. I like their guards, but Will Hernandez can be very physical. He can blow people off the line of scrimmage, but he just doesn't do it on a consistent basis. And he has, you know, lapses as far as concentration at times. But he's a player that I think has a chance to become a pretty good pro. So they're a better football team than what we saw the other day. You can't take them for granted. How they play next week. You know, I think I said it the other day, and it happens more so in college than it does in the NFL, but a team grows more between game one and game two than any other time during the year, and I think that's going to be especially so with the Giants.
Well, I don't know if the Lions are going to grow between games one and two. I think they'll still be stupid in game two, but that's in the rearview mirror, like I said.
No, we got to play them again, so then we can talk about it later.
We'll bring it back. Saquon Barkley, to his credit and to the Giants' offensive coordinator's credit, they did get him involved, even though he wasn't able to run the ball. He still had six catches for 60 yards. But again, 16 carries for 6 yards overall, Greg, that's less than half a yard a carry. Was it him? Was it the offensive line? Or was it what the Steelers did to thwart them? I mean, how does that happen? This guy's too good for that.
Well, I think part of it is the Steelers, go back to what I said about the Bears, you know, they don't know what to expect. So I think they tried to be on defensively, they tried to be on the offensive and just throw everything they could as far as different looks, different blitzes. If you notice, like in passing situations, they blitzed a lot, especially from the inside. There was just about every pass play. They seldom went with four pass rushers. Often they went with five. Sometimes they went with six. And you get into a situation like that, and you got a young offensive line, it's the first time they've played together, you're going to confuse these guys. And that's what happened in the game and happened in the run game, too. I mean, there was times where Barkley got hit as soon as he got the ball. And more often than not, it was a case of a linebacker coming in and not being touched because of an overload situation.
All right, we're going to get to the Bears and hear from Matt Nagy in just a second here. But one other person to watch for from the Giants offensively is one of their good wide receivers, Darius Slayton. He had a 100-yard game, 102 yards to be exact, on six catches. Tell me what you can about him.
Well, I think both their outside receivers, Sterling Shepard and Slayton, are good football players. The other receiver, you know, Golden Tate didn't play because of the injury. Excuse me. Remains to be seen if he plays this week. They had C.J. Board in there. you know, this guy was a free agent coming out of a college a couple of years ago, so he is what he is. I'll tell you that the player that I thought, well, it surprised me a little bit and that I thought was misused by Garrett, and that is Evan Engram. Evan Engram is a weapon, but they tried to use him often as a Y tight end, and the one thing he can't do is block. And having him in as the Y on some of those rundowns and trying to – he got abused as a blocker. And that's not his game. It wasn't the game. He never lined up tight when he was at Mississippi. He was always flexed out. He's more of a big wide receiver. This is a guy that ran 4.48 or something like that, or maybe 4.41 when he was at the combine. Probably one of the fastest tight ends in the NFL, yet they were trying to use him as that old-fashioned – why tight end, and he can't do that.
All right, let's hear from Matt Nagy now, who today is the first day that he basically starts previewing the next game, and that, of course, is coming up on Sunday. And we've all talked about what Mitch Trubisky did in last Sunday's game. He was, at best pedestrian through the first three quarters, and then obviously he had a great fourth quarter with the Lions helping out a little bit. But anyway, here's Matt Nagy talking about where he hopes to see the improvement in Mitch Trubisky this week.
Every game's a little different. He figures out, okay, where can I get better? Well, third down and a couple places in the red zone, Mitch would tell you that we could get better there. And so we just got to keep – we got to make sure that we as coaches are putting these players in the best position possible and making them take advantage of their strengths. If we're not doing that as coaches, that's our fault. But if we then put them in a great position and – then it's their job to execute. And I think that's where collectively we got to make sure every single day we are harping on the details to be perfect.
All right, two more from the head coach, Greg, and then I'll have you comment on overall okay. what he's talking about. You know, last year there was such a wide disparity between Trubisky and the shotgun and under center. Well, as it turned out, in Sunday's game against the Lions, it was pretty much 50-50. And here's the head coach talking about that.
This is actually Trubisky talking about that.
I'm sorry. This is Mitch Trubisky talking about that. My fault.
I just wanted to say hi, guys. You're doing great.
Hey, it's Aldo. It's the boss.
I'm doing great. It's
Trubisky. You know what? We were flawless until then. But anyway, all right. Here's Mitch Trubisky talking about 50-50 under center and from the shotgun. Here's the quarterback.
I kind of looked at the self-scout from last year, too, and I just saw the more productive and explosive plays were coming from under center. And when we were selling the run, just like the pass, when we didn't give a defensive tell, and a lot of the times we were in shotgun and teams would favor the pass more. And when they know pass is coming, it just makes it a lot harder to find completions and get explosive plays because they're just going to sag off, play soft zone, and keep everything in front. But when they have to respect the run, I think it sucks run defenders up and creates bigger pockets for our playmakers to go make plays. And I think it's another thing with it being the NFL. It's you could see more a lot of high school and in college has a lot of shotgun, but under center, I mean, defenses are so good. You got to do something else to keep them honest. And if you're just going gun every time, I think it makes it hard on the O-line. They're going to pin their ears back and get a lot of tough rushing. And if you go under center, it really slows the rush down because they have to respect more the run factor.
All right, and even before we get to the last soundbite here, Aldo, do you want to respond to that? And also, Greg, both of you guys.
You know, I think what it gets down to is Nagy and the offensive coaches got to play to the strengths of Mitch. And let's go back to Sunday, and when they got into that hurry-up mode in the fourth quarter, Mitch was flawless. Now, it was that the way the plays were being called, or was that Mitch himself, or is that the fast pace of the offense? You know, I think it's a combination of all of the above. When you get in that hurry up mode, it takes away from the playbook as far as the number of things you can do. But at the same time, the onus is on the quarterback to make the plays, and that's exactly what he did. I'll go back to what I said, you know, when we did our show on Monday, and that is, as poorly or as inconsistent as Mitch played early in the game, he was able to turn it around, and he did that himself. And he corrected mistakes, and he went from being the GOAT of that game into being the hero because of his play in the fourth quarter, and that alone is going to give him a lot of confidence going into this weekend's game. you know, I'd be kind of shocked if he starts off slow, but part of that's going to be on how they call the game.
Aldo?
Yeah, and I'd like to add that this was a huge problem in 2019, that the offense was so predictable. The defensive players were yelling across the line of scrimmage, calling out the play because they knew what was going to happen out of that shotgun position. And so Matt Nagy was asked the question first, and he said, we self-scouted and realized that we had fallen into a pattern. And then Matt Nagy echoed it on that echoey soundbite. And so the key thing is here is that they corrected something that they did poorly last year. And I think that's an encouraging sign. And so hopefully we're going to see them make self-corrections, do more self-scouting, correct the mistakes from the week before. And it doesn't take them a whole season to make these corrections.
Yeah. Well, let's go back. Go ahead, David.
No, you can please go ahead.
Okay. Let's go back to what I said about the Giants. And I said one thing the Bears aren't going to be able to do when they're watching Giants film is they're not going to have any tendencies of how the Giants run their offense because it's a new offense. Jason Garrett has not been a coordinator or been a play caller in years. And so there's bits and pieces from the Dallas offense, but you can't go back and look at Dallas tape to see exactly what they were doing. In other words, you don't have tendencies for each down. And that's what the Bears were doing to themselves when they self-scout. They were looking, and there are certain tendencies, the down and distance tendencies, that they were doing over and over again, and part of it based on whatever formation they came out of. So how you get away from that is in certain times you change formation. You can do sometimes similar things, but just change formations. Change the formation, the look that you're giving the defense, and that can throw the defense off as to what you're going to be doing.
All right, guys, one last soundbite, if we can, from and I'll get this one right. It is from Matt Nagy. And, you know, Greg, you were the first one to point out the other day that maybe Danny Trevathan didn't have his best game in a Bears uniform. Well, Matt Nagy talked about that earlier today.
It's always hard, you know, you come out here this first game, and I think Danny would tell you that he's had better games for sure. He knows that. But the one thing I love about Danny is that he cares so much. He's the leader of this team. Whatever that is that he needs to do, I know he'll do that. And really overall in general, just for our team, really not just defense, not offense, but really the team in general, I think we can play a lot better. And the good part of that, like we talked in our team meeting today, is that being down 17 and still being able to win gives you a little bit of confidence all around, even if we all didn't play or coach our best game.
And Greg, you didn't even have to look at the game tapes. You saw it live action that Trevathan didn't have one of his better games. And you know what? We weren't obviously in Detroit. I know Danny Trevathan, and talking to him many times over the last couple of years, I'm sure he would have been the first person, if the reporters were in the locker room, to say, you know what, guys, I just did not have a good game.
Right. But he's got to be able to bounce back. And that's going to be the whole key, is how well he plays versus how poorly he played on Sunday. So that's going to be one of the things we're going to want to watch this coming week, is how he responds to the adversity of playing poorly last week.
And Robert Quinn is still, at least as of right now, I believe, I haven't seen the injury report today, but I'm sure he's at least questionable. We'll have a better idea come Friday what his status is. I'm going to guess he will play on Sunday, although I thought he would play last Sunday and he did not. So, you know, if he is able to play, Greg, I'm sure you know that makes a big difference with the defense.
Yeah, right now, at least based on the packages that we saw in last week's game, we had no pass rush coming from the opposite side of Khalil Mack. And so even if Quinn can't play, you've got to find a way to get some pressure from that opposite side, be it if Khalil lines up on the right or the left side. Now, and late in the game, they put James Vaughters in. James Vaughters, a year ago in the preseason, had, I think, two sacks and a forced fumble recovery. We made him our first defensive pick in the XFL draft. He's got pass rush ability. You know, he had some success up in Canada. I wouldn't be a bit surprised that if Quinn can't go, we're going to see more of Vaughters this week, because he does have some natural pass rush skills.
All right, guys, time for the prediction for Sunday's game. I had the Bears starting off the season 3-0, so I'm not going to back off that. I think they start faster. They have to. If they play, I don't think the Giants are that great either, to be honest with you. But I think the Bears will start faster. The weather's going to be nice, cool afternoon at Soldier Field. No fans, of course. I have the Bears winning 27-16.
Well, the good news about it being at home and no attendance is that if Mitch starts poorly, you're not going to hear about it in the stands. So, you know, he might hear it in his head, but he's not going to hear it right there. Unless there's thousands of people on the outside of Soldier Field watching it on TV. But I think that the Bears win. I think they win by 10. But I think the Giants are going to show up a lot more than they did on Monday night.
Aldo?
I'm predicting a blowout for the Chicago Bears. I really do believe that the offense is going to look up a lot better, but I also predict there's going to be a lot of turnovers. And so the Giants might score 10, 14 points off of turnovers, but I think that the Chicago Bears are going to score some points off of turnovers too, and the offense is going to put three up on the board and watch for A-Rab to have a sensational game based after all of this turmoil that's happened this week.
All right.
Go ahead, David.
No, I was going to say one other prediction. The traffic will be much less than normal at Soldier Field. And as a jaded reporter, yeah.
My question to Aldo, why do you think there's going to be more turnovers?
I just feel like there's still a lot of sloppy play that we're going to see in the NFL in this first quarter of the season. These are still essentially preseason games. And so I just have it in my gut feel with with temperatures dipping into the 50s this weekend, one weather forecaster said. I just have a gut feel more than anything scientific.
All right,
okay,
guys.
I just look at it that, you know, there's no turnovers, almost an interception on one play, but overall no turnovers by the offense this past week. And generally speaking, unless you make a huge mistake, you improve from week one to week two.
All right, guys, before we get to college football, and there is some big news in college football, and I do want to touch on that. And, Greg, I know you have some very strong opinions on what happened today with the Big Ten, but I just circled a few games elsewhere around the NFL on Sunday. Just your predictions and some thoughts on some of these games. We'll start in the division. Detroit will be at Green Bay. I think Aaron Rodgers, I mean, he looked really good against Minnesota. He's going to be Hall of Fame Aaron Rodgers on Sunday against Detroit. What do you guys think?
I agree. Blowout.
I'm with you, David. You and I normally don't agree, but I'm with you on that one.
Okay. All right. Buffalo at Miami. I'm giving up or talking about your home team, Greg. Buffalo at Miami. Miami is just an enigma team, and I think Buffalo is going to give New England a run for the money in the division again this season. So I like Buffalo to win on the road.
I think that's a blowout too. Buffalo is a pretty good football team. Not so for Miami, and I think they just want to keep making a statement. They're coming off a high. That game against the Jets, it was a rout. They gave up, you know, two late garbage touchdowns to the Jets. Otherwise, they win going away.
Aldo?
Buffalo is actually going to go to the Super Bowl this season, and they're going to blow it again because that's what they do. But I like them to win against Miami.
I don't know if they go to the Super Bowl, but they got a good football team.
All right, let's go down to Florida. I think by then the effects of the hurricane will be out of the state of Florida. The loser of this game is in big trouble. Carolina at Tampa Bay, they both started off 0-1. Brady's, you know, first home game in the new stadium. I think he bounces back from really not even a pedestrian game in New Orleans the other day. I like Tampa Bay to win pretty big in this game also.
I tend to agree with you, David. And only because I didn't see any of Carolina this past week, but I don't think they've had enough. You know, you got a coach who's really first time coaching in the NFL as a head coach. He had some time as an assistant, but really most of his time has been as a college coach. I don't think they've put it all together yet.
Aldo?
I think Tom Brady last year showed that he was degenerating as a starting quarterback. I mean, I think Father Time is starting to catch up with him, and his play from last season continued into that first game of this season, and I don't have high expectations for him to correct problems in game two, so I think the Bucks are going to lose another one.
Wow. You think too many nights with his supermodel wife?
Yeah. Did you see the video of him kissing his son on the lips? That was gross.
No, I'm glad I didn't, to be honest with you. All right, let's a few more games in the NFL. Kansas City and the LA Chargers. You saw the Rams play in the vacant new stadium. You're going to see the Chargers play in the vacant new stadium in Los Angeles. They're both undefeated. Kansas City looked as good in the opener as they did all of last year. I think Kansas City wins on the road.
I agree with you. I don't think the Chargers are that good. They struggle at the quarterback position with Tyrod Taylor. He's just not good enough to be a starter. It's just a matter of time before they get the rookie Herbert in there as a starting quarterback.
I'm with you guys. Disagreement there.
Okay. I think the feature game of the day is later in the afternoon. I think it's later in the afternoon on Sunday. A couple of so far undefeated teams, New England at Seattle, both starting with wins. I think New England is going to have another good season, but I think they are going to hit a speed bump here, and I like Seattle at home on Sunday.
Well, I'll tell you, if it was Seattle at home with a crowd, I'd agree with you. I really believe now that given these empty stadiums, there is no home field advantage. The only advantage they have is that New England has to travel literally across the country going from Boston to Seattle. So it's a long flight. That could wear on them a little bit. But if you're comparing team A to team B, I think it's a close game, but you're probably right. Seattle wins.
New England doesn't have any weapons, and so I think that the Seattle defense is going to stop the Cam Newton rushing attack, and he's going to have problems completing passes. Seattle, I think, in a cakewalk, very easy.
All right, and I will say that playing out in Seattle is an incredible advantage when the fans are there. I don't know what they call it, the 12th man or whatever. It is the loudest football stadium I've ever been in. I saw the Bears play out there a couple of times. All right, the last game I got on my list here for Sunday, there are other games, of course. A couple of 1-0 teams so far. New Orleans in Las Vegas against the Raiders. I still can't get used to calling them the Las Vegas Raiders. I want to go out and see a game out there, though, one of these days. But 1-0 teams, what do you think, guys?
I'm going to go with the Saints because of Drew Brees, even though their best receiver, the number one receiver, Thomas, isn't going to be able to play.
Yeah, I like the sound of Vegas Raiders. Take out the loss, and it sounds pretty cool, Vegas Raiders, right? But in any case, I think the Saints are going to beat up on the Raiders in this game. I still believe in Drew Brees. He's the other old quarterback in the NFL who I still think has something left in the tank.
All right, I agree. And we were pretty much in concurrence here. I like New Orleans also on Sunday. All right, before we get out of here, college football, the Big Ten earlier today did announce, as we all anticipated eventually they would, that they are going to play. They have new protocols in place. They say that's going to make the big difference. I don't know why they have to wait until October 23rd or 24th. That's 5 weeks from now, but that's the case. The Big Ten is back. I think money decided the day here, guys. And Greg, I know you got some strong, strong opinions on this.
Well, they've got to wait, 5 weeks, 4.5 weeks to play because they haven't been practicing. So you got to go through the training camp situation. Generally speaking, you have 4 weeks of practice before your first game. So I think that's what it has to do with. As far as why did this happen, I think the Big Ten was getting killed publicity-wise. They were getting killed on the recruiting side. Players were flipping. Other players were taking the Big Ten schools off their list as their top priority school for guys who hadn't committed. I think when they – and then, there's money. You're not making any money, so be it TV money or whatever. So I think all those things came together, and the coaches and the athletic directors put a lot of pressure on the administration of these schools, and they won out.
But I know also, Greg, that you're very strong in your feelings that you don't think the Big Ten playing less games than the other conference, like the Southeast or the ACC or the Big 12, you don't think that they should be eligible for the national championship. I'm going to go against you on this one. I think, yes, it's an advantage, the fact that they're playing four or five less games, wear and tear on the body, of course. But this is the craziest year that we'll ever, all of us will probably ever encounter in our lives, and that's just the way it is.
No, I get that. I'm not saying they shouldn't be eligible. I'm just saying they shouldn't get in. And that when the committee gets together and makes the vote, they're not going to let him in. You won't see a Big Ten team in there unless Ohio State is just totally dominant during that abbreviated season.
Well, yes. I mean, you know, you have to wait until sometime in December. I think the conference championship in the Big Ten will still be sometime later in December, and then they'll vote probably like right after that. I'm anticipating that if a Big Ten team, it doesn't have to be Ohio State. It could be Michigan, although with Jim Harbaugh there, we won't be. But I think if Ohio State definitely goes undefeated in conference play, they will be in one of the four teams that's picked to play in the championship.
Well, we'll see on that one. Like I said, I tweeted out earlier, I think there is a, the Big Ten obviously has a presence on the committee, but so do the other conferences. And I think the schools that have been playing and took the risk to play are going to gang up basically on the Big Ten. Now, the interesting thing is, does the Pac-12 come back into play now? And then you're going to have a full, Power Five reign of schools going, for the rest of the football season. There has not been a peep, as far as I know anyway, even not just today, but in the last few weeks, as far as the Pac-12 even trying to come back and play.
Aldo, your thoughts?
What a mess, right? I mean,
yes,
couldn't they have all agreed on one plan? But it is what it is. Here we go again, using that term. It is what it is.
We used that a lot the other day.
Yes, we did. It seems to be the phrase of 2020. But hopefully the Big Ten has learned from all the other sports and they get through this safely. There'll be football. Hopefully everything will be safe, and let's enjoy every down of it.
Okay,
well,
guys.
I'm going to do that. That's for darn sure.
Yep.
All right, before we wrap this up, I have one last question for you, Greg. Who painted your room? I love how that room is painted. I love the color, and I love whoever did it. It looks so incredibly professional. I just got to ask that question.
Well, we built this house 15 years ago, and my wife picked out the color. I'm in the study. So it's got that, I forgot the actual color name. But there is part of the room has a bit of a sports flavor to it because of my history. But then my wife's got an added touch to it. But she picked out all the colors in the house.
It's very meticulously done. I'm looking up in the corners. I don't see any running of paint, and I'm a big freak about that kind of stuff. So kudos to whoever did it, by the way.
Thank you.
Okay.
You don't like my – you never complimented my the painting of my
– Well.
We're looking at the bar room now, right?
That's right.
Your room downstairs is a little bit different. Not that we don't have a lot of fun down there. And speaking of fun, this has been fun today, guys. I mean, I didn't know I'd have so much fun doing a video podcast, but we'll look forward to doing more of them. We have an audio one coming up on Monday. We all have the Bears winning on Sunday's game, and we'll completely, thoroughly dissect it come Monday right here on the Bears Bar Room.
I got to say this, though, David. A few years ago, the Bears went to New York, and I think it was when Mitch was hurt and Chase Daniel was the starting quarterback. I may be wrong on that, but the Giants ended up winning that game. So you get games like that, and I spent 17 years working for the Giants. I know what kind of organization it is, and I just know that they're going to play the Bears a little bit tougher than we think.
Okay, great. We'll talk about it on Monday. Guys, it's been a great podcast here, and we'll talk all again very shortly. Have a great afternoon.